77 wolves live in the wild in the state of Oregon. That's the release of a new wolf census last week showing growth from the year before. It's an estimate. Your view of that number is relative. It's obviously far more than the none that lived in the state 2 decades ago, but it's certainly far fewer than might be hanging around if we hadn't hunted wolves to the point of eradication in the 20th century. The recently updated census produces varied reactions and observations with a look to where we go from here. Quinn Reed is the wildlife coordinator at the group Oregon Wild and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Quinn, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. As wildlife coordinator, what do you do at, as if the name itself weren't explanation enough?
You know, I work on a number of things. So the focus of my work is on the recovery of threatened and endangered native species here in Oregon, with a special focus on the Department of Fish and Wildlife and helping that agency reform so it is empowered and fully funded to do the important work that it needs to do.
That's a curious viewpoint. I hadn't heard that one quite before, but has that been an issue for Oregon Fish and Wildlife that they haven't had quite enough money to be able to do what they need to do?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this year, the agency is actually facing a $32 million budget shortfall. And, you know, this is a challenging issue for a number of reasons, but when we look at it with respect to wolves, it sort of highlights the issue. You know, here we have an agency that has done really what I think is quite an exemplary job of managing wolves here in the state. But without funding to do that kind of work moving forward, that implicates future recovery, not just for wolves, but for potentially other threatened and endangered species that need management.
What's the reason for the shortfall? I mean, is the general revenue source for fish and wildlife hunting and fishing licenses?
Yeah, that's correct. So they follow a very similar model, you know, and this is really a nationwide model where fish and wildlife agencies have historically, anyway, relied mostly on revenues from hunting and license revenues or from sales of hunting and fishing licenses. Over time, and again, this is a nationwide trend, what we've seen is that there has been a decline in those revenues, and agencies have not been able to simultaneously come up with new sources of revenue. So the gap tends to increase over time, and we're seeing that sort of reach sort of a critical mass this year.
Okay, I don't want to go too far off into the finances of fish and wildlife, but talk about what they're able to do here. So coming back to the wolf census itself, just the raw number, 77, as we pointed out, bigger than last year's 64. Is this about what was expected by groups like yours?
You know, it's certainly progress, which is very exciting. But, you know, a lot of the numbers, you know, when you look at other states and when you look at some of the predictions about the way that wolves might recover, there's this idea that wolves will recover exponentially, and that's not what we're seeing. What we're seeing here in Oregon, at least, is a very incremental increase in the number of wolves. So up 13 from last year, that's far from exponential growth. It does represent recovery. But from our perspective, we're far from where we need to be to have, you know, lasting recovery for this species.
How accurate does anybody think that number is? I mean, we're kind of making a couple of assumptions based on things you find from cameras and what we know about the wolves that actually have radio collars, like OR7 with his now failing collar.
You know, I think there's certainly, you know, a margin of error there. But, you know, wolves in the state, and again, it's sort of indicative of how important this issue is here in Oregon, you know, they're managed very carefully. So, you know, the group in charge at ODFW of managing wolves are watching very carefully. They've got, you know, highly capable staff, you know, a lot of funding to pursue this issue, to track the number of wolves. You know, they're working on collaring wolves, so they're monitoring these populations quite closely. That being said, it's, of course, there's a margin of error. So I would assume these numbers are actually quite close to what you'd see out in the wild.
All right, so reasonably accurate is what anybody can figure out here. I'm struck by something that is pointed out in the material that came out of your group, Oregon Wild, the fact that of the 77 wolves we're talking about, that's not a whole lot actually west of Interstate 84, and folks need to remember that Interstate 84 slants away from the Columbia Gorge down in the general direction of Boise, so most of the wolves still in far northeastern Oregon.
That's correct. It's actually quite striking if you look at the map. You can see that almost all of the wolves are concentrated in that far northeastern corner of the state. And there really is a physical boundary along I-84. So, again, they're concentrated up in that northeastern corner. Then we have one pack, the Rogue Pack, and of course that's the famous wolf, OR7's pack, down in the southern Cascades. But really, that's the extent of the expansion beyond I-84. So we can see that that highway still represents, you know, a very physical barrier for wolves.
Quinn Reed is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the wildlife coordinator for the conservation group Oregon Wild, once the Oregon Natural Resources Council. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about wolves and approaches to wolf recovery. 800-838-3760 around the region, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we're already at a number, though, where things are supposed to begin changing. Is that correct about the approach to how wolves are managed?
Yes, and actually, the state has already moved to phase two of its wolf management plan. So we've already started to see shifts toward less protection for wolves here in Oregon.
And what does that mean, phase two? What are some of the particular components of that?
Well, practically speaking, what it means is that we already have less protection for wolves. On the ground, it means that ranchers have more flexibility to take action on their own when it comes to managing wolves on their own property. So, you know, a private property owner could shoot wolves without consulting with the agency first if they catch a wolf in action. It's a little bit unclear about what that means, but what we can say is that overall there's more flexibility for private property owners to shoot wolves of their own accord.
All right. And it used to be you had to catch them in the act. They actually had to be chomping on your cattle or your sheep to be able to actually fire a gun at them. Is that correct?
Right. And it scales back on that a little bit. So, you know, previously, again, it was almost completely managed by the state agency. So now we're seeing more moves toward flexibility for private property owners.
All right. So more flexibility means potentially more wolves killed by humans. And what do we know about livestock predation? I've gone a couple times with different people on this issue here, and it seems like when we talk about cattle, the numbers are not great, but we haven't explored the sheep issue very much. Can you kind of break things out for us about what you know, Quinn?
Sure. So, well, you know, an interesting thing about the wolf report is that as we've seen, again, incremental increases in the wolf population, what we've seen is a decrease in the number of depredation incidents. So we actually went from 13 confirmed incidents to 11. With respect to sheep, and again, this is just in 2014, so while depredation incidents decreased, there were a couple of incidents where there were higher mortality rates. So one incident resulted in the loss of more sheep. And some of that may just be a function of how sheep operate and how they move about in the landscape, making it easier for you know, a wolf potentially to basically to prey on them.
Right. Now, there is money that flows out of the state to assist landowners who might be losing livestock to wolves, correct?
Correct. There's actually a very, very comprehensive plan to compensate any ranchers for the loss of livestock. So, you know, under the plan, if there is an incident of depredation, it is investigated by ODFW. If it is confirmed, then that livestock owner is compensated fully. So it's actually quite a good plan, and I think strikes a very good balance between conservation and recovery goals and the very valid concerns from the ranching community.
This kind of circles back around to the amount of money available for fish and wildlife, though. It seems to me that if the predation numbers climb much, that there'd be some issues with how much they're able to explain. I mean, how much they're able to pay.
You know, that's certainly a valid point. You know, I don't know what funding will look like into the future, especially as we see the agency struggling with its own budget. But for the moment, this issue is very high profile. The wolf plan is funded. So I don't see that compensation program changing a whole lot. You know, it's an important part of the plan. It's also important to remember that continued recovery is part of the plan. And if these trends continue, where we continue to have incremental recovery and decreases in livestock depredation, that concern doesn't seem to be a big issue, at least not right now. And I think what it points to is a need to continue operating under the plan as it exists. You know, what they're doing right now is working. So scaling back from that probably isn't the best idea at this point.
Quinn, have the numbers come along about as people expected? I mean, given when wolves first came into Oregon, which is the 90s, is that what I'm thinking?
Mm-hmm, yes.
All right. I mean, is the growth about what people might have expected? I mean, without any particular assistance from humans, they've just scattered by themselves, and they came into the state by themselves. They were introduced in Idaho, not in Oregon.
Well, you know, again, I think there's this idea that, you know, left unchecked or left to their own devices, recovery will occur exponentially. And we certainly haven't seen that. So, you know, they're quite a hardy species, left to their own devices. But, you know, we kind of have a hard time leaving them alone. So they are recovering, maybe not at the same rate or not to the level that we would actually expect. Again, what we're seeing is this trend here with a physical barrier at I-84, keeping them somewhat cornered up there in the Northeast. What we'd love to see is broader geographic distribution. You know, that would, that would at least indicate that the population was at a more sustainable level.
And are we talking about assisting that dispersion or what?
No, that would have to happen on its own.
All right. Yeah, and I'm struck again as I look at the map because everybody else in the north corner of Oregon, except for the Rogue Pack, which is OR7s, mm-hmm. and the Keno Pair. Other than that, there are, I don't know, it looks like about 200 miles of central Oregon separating where most of the wolves in Oregon are and those groups.
Right. It really is quite striking. And until we see some natural movement of wolves from that northeastern corner, we really don't have the distribution necessary to make sure that the population can sustain itself.
Quinn Reed, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, wildlife coordinator at the group Oregon Wild. We are talking about wolf numbers coming back in Oregon. 77 is the census released last week for the year 2014, which is an increase of 13 by the 64 from the year before. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Bruce in Ashland sends an email. He asks, please explain how top predators will affect the ecosystem long term, even down to changing the plant landscape.
So wolves are what are known as a keystone species. So these are species that have a disproportionate impact on their environment compared to, you know, other species in the food chain. So, you know, wolves are a keystone species. Sea otters are a keystone species. And when you look at things like the recovery of wolves in Yellowstone, you see pretty clear examples about how keystone species like wolves can impact the environment. So you see changes where these keystone species can help balance out populations of other species that then trickle down all the way down to the plant life. So absent top predators, you may see prey species, their populations, you know, exploding, and then they feed too heavily on plant species that are available. And that, again, throws the ecosystem out of balance. So by allowing those top predators, those keystone species, to recover, you basically reintroduce balance to the ecosystem, and that has an effect from the top down.
Specifically in Yellowstone, the frequently cited story is the growth of willows along the creeks and rivers in the Yellowstone Basin because the elk don't want to browse there anymore because hanging out in the open, they're afraid they're going to get attacked by wolves.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite striking. You know, there are pictures you can find online, before and after pictures, that really illustrate, you know, sort of a barren landscape versus sort of a lush, beautiful ecosystem that, you know, as you can imagine, is what Mother Nature intended. So, you know, when things are in balance, we have ecosystems that overall are in balance.
Interesting to think about the fact that the look of things is actually perhaps better than we thought when there are other creatures that, quote unquote, are scary in the landscape.
Right. And that scariness is an interesting point. You know, I think that wolves, to a larger degree than other animals, really strike an emotional chord with people. And I think that's important to remember whenever we talk about wolves. You know, there's all of this lore and mythology around wolves that people, you know, people have this idea that they are scary, but they are a natural and absolutely important part of our landscape and help balance our ecosystem so that we can continue to enjoy other aspects of the landscape that we love so much.
We have a call here from Jeff in Roseburg. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Quinn Reed from Oregon Wild. She's the wildlife coordinator. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. Well, I'm in Douglas County, and There's been several sightings here and it's all undocumented and, you know, not part of your count. They collar the wolves, and you're saying they're all in the northeast. But they Fish and Wildlife will only count the ones that they can actually document, but they don't, you know, the sightings from hunters and all that, you know, doesn't get counted. And the other thing is the Fish and Wildlife gets their money from selling tags, and so the Oregon Wild people need to pony up and pay for their wolves.
All right. Thanks for that, Jeff. Appreciate it. So part one was sightings that are not included in the census. Part two was the idea of Oregon Wild actually paying into the system.
Yeah, and those are both great points. So, you know, with respect to sightings that aren't reported, I think that speaks to the margin of error that we were discussing a little bit earlier. So there are people on the ground, you know, biologists, wildlife management professionals employed by ODFW whose job it is to manage populations. Again, they can only monitor and track what they know. That being said, when there are reports, when there are wolf sightings, those are all reported to the agencies, and, you know, they work to the best of their ability to document those wolves and make sure those are accounted for. That being said, you know, there's often a lag between reporting, you know, sightings on the ground and when it's officially reported. But again, that speaks to the margin of error. So we know that exists. That being said, we know 77 wolves is a fairly accurate representation of the population as it stands.
What do you think about Jeff's idea of having Oregon Wild help pay for the wolves it wants to see returned?
You know, actually, I think it's a fantastic point. So, you know, one of the things we've seen with ODFW, and he's absolutely right, historically, hunting and fishing license revenues have funded the Fish and Wildlife agencies here in our country. What we've seen, however, is less interest over time in hunting and fishing and more interest in other forms of wildlife-based recreation. So people who want to go out and watch birds, people who want to go hiking for the primary purpose of seeing wildlife. We think it's a great idea for the agency to look at ways to capture revenue from that growing population of the segment that's interested in conservation. So we are absolutely, and in fact, we are proactively working with the agency in this legislative session to find ways to capture revenue to represent the conservation interest and to help fund those programs.
All right. Let's take another call from Dennis in Fort Bragg, California. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Quinn Reed from Oregon Wild.
Hi. I'm a retired forester, long retired, 15 years. Anyhow, I spent all my life wandering around the Redwood region doing work. And my interaction with animals changed over time from practically no interaction to quite a few of the wild creatures being spotted as the years went by, as their numbers grew. And in California, we now have a very large population of black bears and cougars. The cougars are under no-shoot protection. The bears are still hunted. Anyhow, their populations do grow dramatically and rapidly once you take off the predator on them. So I was wondering, for your state, how many to have genetic diversity widespread over the whole state, how many wolves are we talking about? And do you have to have corridors connecting them so that they are able to get from one genetic pool to the other? Anyhow, something along those lines is what I'm curious about.
All right. Thanks for that, Dennis. Appreciate it. Quinn?
So I think, you know, that question also speaks to the isolation of wolves here in Oregon. So, you know, to have the genetic diversity, I think we need to see, again, broader geographic distribution. So, you know, it's actually an interesting point, the idea of having wildlife corridors. That's something that could be interesting to explore, given that we're seeing I-84 representing a very real physical barrier to wolves' expansion. So to allow them to disperse, allow their population to grow, and then have the genetic diversity and the geographic distribution necessary to have the population grow and be sustaining, that kind of thing might be necessary. Now, that being said, you know, we did see OR7, who is so far unique in his kind, or at least in this state, who has crossed that divide on his own and initiated his own pack. But we're just not seeing that as a broader trend just yet.
To the point of an overall number, that was a good point that Dennis brought up about if there is a particular target number that Oregon Wild, for example, would be happy with.
You know, it's interesting. In the wolf plan, there's not a cap on wolf numbers. There's an interesting point, you know, to move from phase one of the plan to phase two, which is where we're at right now, there had to be four breeding pairs. To be eligible to move to the next phase, which again is, you know, very little protection for wolves. And I should also point out, in this year, they're looking at removing protections for wolves in the state. There have to be seven breeding pairs. So if you'll notice the wolf numbers right now, we have nine packs and eight breeding pairs. So if those numbers stay in place for three consecutive years, we move to phase three. Now, again, important to note that that does not represent a cap. Even the agency does not acknowledge that as that number as a cap. What we know is that that was sort of a number that was established for the purposes of wolf management for this plan. So 77 wolves, it's very hard to argue that that represents lasting recovery. We know that historically wolves were distributed broadly throughout the state. But we also know the ecosystem has changed fundamentally. So what that number might look like today could be something very different. And I think it will be a balance of interest.
Quickly, Quinn, Boyd in Wolf Creek and Mike Notown, given both asked the same question about natural bridges to allow wildlife dispersal. Any talk of that in Oregon?
You know, it's not something that we have explored broadly yet, but something I think we'd be very interested in discussing with the agency.
All right. We'll be talking to you again. Quinn Reed, is the wildlife coordinator at Oregon Wild. We'll talk about wolves again down the road. Quinn, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you so much.